And we've finished out the first quarter. Obviously, we've had quite the run across global financial markets, but something strange is occurring here in the last several days, and not surprisingly, following on from last week's Fed announcement. Welcome, this is Ilya Spivak, head of global macro here at Tasty Live, and this is Macro Money. And what we're going to do here is take stock a little bit of how things have performed and what momentum has looked like since that fateful announcement last week, and see what sort of insights seem to be jumping out from that. And from there, consider what might be the next catalyst for these markets as we go into not only next week, but next quarter. And in looking at this, what we're asking ourselves, certainly what I'm asking myself here, is with stock markets globally seemingly stuck, can it be the economy at the global relief here, the big picture view, that can get them moving again? Now, of course, it is very straightforward to say that, as we mentioned, the first quarter has been a tremendously positive one for global equities, but consider how things have performed since last week's Fed meeting. That meeting was on the 20th. Its substance was unmistakably dovish. The central bank kept its forecast from December, calling for 3 rate cuts, even as it upgraded growth and inflation forecasts. The Fed chair, Jerome Powell, when asked pointedly how they squared that circle, said, "Ah, well, the upgraded forecasts reflected data that was already out, not data that we're necessarily looking forward to. Oh, and by the way, not only are we going to do 3 cuts, we're also looking at slowing down the pace of quantitative tightening," which is the shrinking of the Fed's balance sheet that's been occurring in the background for quite a while now, which again is a form of shifting to a less hawkish monetary policy. So lots to like for markets there. They, of course, enjoyed it at the time. Stocks went up, yields went down, dollar weakened, all the usual things you might expect. Since then, though, a bit of a different view here. And what we're looking at are ETFs that are tracking the major components of the stock markets globally and how they've performed since that Fed announcement. So what we find right here, this is ACWI, the All Country World Index. This is global equities altogether. Since that Fed announcement, they have done nothing at all. They are essentially stuck. It's been over a week now, and they have gone nowhere. If we look at where the weakness has been greatest, as far as developed versus emerging markets, clearly the emerging market space is particularly soft here. And if we look at that space excluding China, things look much better, which really puts in stark relief that the biggest source of weakness in emerging markets has been China. And this right here, ASHR, is an ETF that tracks China's catch-all CSI 300 index. That's the Shenzhen and the Shanghai Bourse's top names together, sort of like China's version of the S&P 500. You can see that's easily the worst performer, down almost 2%. When we look at developed markets, there's a very interesting spread, though, and a very clear pattern. If we look at where there has been weakness. In the U.S., the overall S&P 500, SPY ETF, flat. Almost no change at all since the Fed announcement. But the NASDAQ is off almost 1%. Now, this, of course, is eye-catching because the names that have really led this rally since it began in late October, early November, have been U.S. tech names. And, of course, as we've argued here endlessly on macro money, the catalyst for that ostensibly looks like it was the prospect of Fed easing. We'll get back to this tally momentarily, but you can see that here. So, as more rate cuts were getting built into the 2024 outlook, stocks stopped falling and began rising. This begins to occur late October, early November. The Fed, of course, has its meeting on November 1st, where it tells markets, we are probably done hiking rates. In December, they quantify what that means by saying, here's an updated set of economic expectations. We think we're going to cut three times in 2024. That's the green line you see running across the screen. With its most recent policy announcement last week on the 20th, the Fed reiterated that forecast. So that's the line for both where the Fed set it up in December 2023 initially and where it remains now. You can see that as long as there is more easing relative to this line, stocks are powered higher. We begin to see the number of rate cuts diminish at the beginning of this year as economic data starts getting better out of the U.S. And so the stock of rate cuts starts to get pulled in from 150 basis points to now 63 as of today. 63, by the way, amounts to not three but two cuts and about a 50-50 chance of a third. So the markets are at this point even a little bit less dovish than the Fed, but broadly speaking, we can see that we're in alignment now. Since that Fed policy announcement, that alignment has essentially been reinforced because the Fed told us we can look at data, upgrade it, and still keep our forecast. So there's relatively little to speculate on here. The Fed is basically saying we're on a course and we're trying to stay on it. And so if this was the impetus for stocks going higher, if the catalyst was cheaper future money, then what the Fed told us with this announcement last week is you can stop speculating on this. You're already aligned with where we want to go, and we're not nearly as jumpy from one piece of data to the next as maybe we were appearing before. So this is pretty locked in at this point. We want to do three. You all think we're going to do about three. There's nothing left to speculate on here. This isn't necessarily a tailwind anymore because at this stage, speculation has invariably become reality, or at least as much speculation as there was to do up to this point has been discounted in prices already. Hence, overall standstill in the S&P and the NASDAQ, where the leaders of the rally are, and which is inherently more rates sensitive, there is quite clearly some profit taking. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. Of the other developed markets, where are their gains and where is their weakness? The weakness is in Japan, EWJ, where the central bank has just raised rates for the first time in 17 years. The strength is in Europe. The Eurozone has slightly more modest gains because they've been expected to be the most dovish of the major central banks for a while now. The adjustment, and so the larger increase, has been in the UK, EWU, where just last week, as a matter of fact, the central bank came out, as we discussed here on Macro Money ahead of time, as we expected, and shifted to a more dovish stance, suggested that rate cuts were sooner on the way than previously expected. The British pound got whacked. And of course, local stocks saw an outsized uplift. So if we look at which developed markets have done better versus which developed markets have done worse, it is the ones where the central banks are more dovish that have done better since this Fed announcement. It is the one where there is less scope for easing that have done worse. Certainly emerging markets, less scope for easing. China, less scope for easing. Japan, less scope for easing because they're actually going the other way. In the US, on the whole, standstill. Because speculation has run out of ammo. There's nothing else to do. The Fed and the markets are in alignment. And you can see this here. This is the stock of rate moves expected from the major central banks here, the Fed, the ECB, the Bank of England. Notice that for the Fed, this is that blue line right here, basically through the course of March, this has idled. For the Bank of England, it has moved lower. And for the ECB, it has idled, but at a lower level than everywhere else. And so what you end up with then is the most cuts are coming from the ECB. Makes sense why those shares are up. The biggest downside adjustment of the three has been in the UK. Makes sense why there's outsized gains. Nothing is happening for the Fed, and so goose egg. So, what of Japan? Well, if you needed any more confirmation, you can see that the path forward here, as implied in markets, is higher. So it's toward gradual tightening, not the other way around. Here's the hike that we saw last week from negative 0.1% up to zero. We're now expecting that over the course of the 6 months that follows, we're expected to see another 10 basis points added. In a year from today, about a total of two hikes, 20 basis points. Over the course of 2 years from today, three. Over the course of 3 years from today, about four. Bank of Japan moves in 10 basis point increments rather than in 25 basis point increments. So this seems to clearly paint a picture here as far as what is driving the markets and what isn't. Because clearly in the absence of the Fed being the object of speculation whereby the markets have something to talk about, be it tighter policy, looser policy, more stimulus, maybe less, there's nothing to do. And this is why since that announcement, overall global shares have gone nowhere. Now, of course, they've also not fallen. And so the question for investors surely now is, okay, we need a new catalyst. What's a new catalyst? Can we get a new catalyst? Can we keep this moving higher on the basis of something? And so, not surprisingly, this becomes a time when it's instructive to take a bit of a pulse check on global economic growth and say, okay, if it's not cheap money that we're betting on, what are we betting on? Where are we in the global economy here? And as ever, the framework that I find helpful in looking at this is this breakdown of global GDP, where we see that the US is about a quarter of overall global output, the Eurozone is about 12%, China is about 16%. Together, they make up wholly half of global GDP. Everybody else is in the other half. But actually, this influence is understating the importance of the US, the Eurozone, and China, because the other 50% largely relies on demand from the former three. They are largely vendors to these large economies. In order for them to have economic growth, there needs to be demand from the US and the Eurozone and China so that these other countries can sell to them. And without that U.S., Eurozone, and Chinese demand, there's nobody to sell to. And so their influence is actually much more outsized than the 50% that they command at first glance. It gets worse because actually China is a kind of middle step in the global supply chain, and it is dependent on U.S. and Eurozone demand as well. So really, the 34% in the U.S. and the Eurozone of global GDP actually speaks to much more of an influence than that give or take third accounts for at the baseline. There is some good news here. What we've seen is that global composite PMIs have been inching higher. We've seen that manufacturing globally seems to have climbed out of contraction territory. 50 in the logic of PMIs, of course, is the line in the sand between expansion and contraction. And we can see that as of February, we've returned to a modicum of positive growth in manufacturing. We've seen improvements powered by services mainly since about October of last year, which nicely coincides with what's been going on in stock markets. And so there is something to be said for an improvement in the global growth story here underpinning what's going on. Except for now, we've been looking at March PMI data. And when we look at these critical economies, it's not so much that they are deteriorating, it's that markets need a forward-looking story. And that part of it is more challenging to identify and to arrive at. Consider the PMI numbers for March out of the US. They're not awful. There's no huge collapse. But what there is the third consecutive month of the U.S. economy coming along at about the same rate that it's been sitting at since the beginning of the year. This has flatlined. It really isn't going much of anywhere. The situation in the Eurozone is not altogether better. What we see here is, yes, services has returned to growth. The composite index is almost back to 50. So this was technically the ninth consecutive month of contraction for Eurozone economic activity, but it's almost back to growth, or at least almost back to standstill. But if we look at what's going on with manufacturing, it's actually diverging in the wrong direction. So if services continues to have some uplift, but manufacturing continues to go the wrong way, it's unclear that we're going to get anything better than standstill from the Eurozone for a while yet. Which brings us to data out of China due this weekend. Just as the world is going to be closed for the Good Friday and the Easter holidays in almost every major market, we are going to get a piece of economic data from China to set the stage a little bit for what's coming next week. These are going to be official PMI numbers out of the local authorities, the National Bureau of Statistics, in conjunction with the CFLP, which is the Chinese Federation for Logistics and Purchasing. They're going to release these numbers. And we can see here, they're looking for an uptick on the services side. That's seen accelerating up to 52 here. And on the manufacturing side, again, similar to what we saw for the composite index in the Eurozone, it has been anemic. It has been shrinking. We're expecting it to shrink again, but at a slower rate, and in fact, the slowest rate that we have seen in quite a while. So for the services side, this would be the fastest pace of economic activity expansion since June 2023. On the manufacturing side, it would be the slowest pace of contraction in 6 months. So in all, these are improvements. Now, this is where things get tricky. In order for the markets to have a narrative to trade on, what they need is something forward-looking. And if we look at the way that Chinese economic data has recently performed relative to expectations, what we find is things anchoring. This index is basically oscillating around zero since essentially October of last year. And what that basically means is that economists' expectations for where the data is going to come out and the actual outcomes have basically converged. Chinese economic data isn't really surprising much to the upside or the downside. It is about where analysts expect it. And so if we get another set of outcomes basically in line, does that make for an impetus for risk sentiment to improve, for stocks to go higher, even in the absence of a speculative drive around Fed rate cuts? Well, probably not. Because if the data, again, comes out basically as expected, what's there to speculate on? Not very much. If we look at the overall direction for where we are on global economic surprises, on US economic surprises, on Eurozone economic surprises, this sort of anchoring continues to show up. For the global index, we're starting to flatline. For the US, we've come off, but seem to have found some kind of a baseline here since the beginning of March. And for the Eurozone, we're actually fading a bit, albeit not in a hurry. So it appears that what we have on the global growth story is a kind of status quo anchored to significant outperformance in the US in relative terms, but no story of acceleration, no story of positive movement toward a faster setting of global growth. And so the question then, of course, becomes, well, what's there to look forward to without that? If the markets before were driven by looking forward to cheaper money, that speculation seems to have run out of steam. And if data out of the US and out of the euro area is giving us basically stasis at recent levels, and then we get further confirmation from the third kind of main engine of global growth from China, from these PMI numbers coming up now, well, then the question gets left unanswered because there is no new catalyst then on the growth side of things. And then, of course, the inevitable question, well, we've had a very strong rally. If there are no more catalysts for global equities, is it maybe more than just the NASDAQ that needs to do some profit taking? And that is Macro Money for today. It's also our last show for this week. As ever, we are here Monday through Thursday, right after Overtime, a show that I co-host with Chris Vecchio and Dylan Radigan, looking at the Wall Street close and where things might go thereafter. We're not going to do a Futures Power Hour on Friday with Chris as we typically do, because, of course, there's the Good Friday holiday. I will be back for First Call with Tom and Victor on Sunday, despite it being Easter Sunday. So come join us for that. And then, of course, next week, Macro Money Overtime and all of the shows that I contribute to return to regular business hours. I'm also writing for the news and insights portion of tastylive.com and opining sporadically on the platform formerly known as Twitter @IliasBivak. Thanks very much for joining. Have a great holiday if you're celebrating. Enjoy a long weekend if you're not, in any case. See you next week. Take care.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live, Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live, Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.